Are you ready, Alabama?
Oh, the band is out on the field!
The band is leaving the field.
And one time, at band camp,
love the drum.
Man, I do love my drum.
If you say that's what she said one more time, I'm gonna pop you.
You're welcome to join the doghouse.
Oh God, I'm so sorry. I keep doing that.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
Be a dog.
The clock starts on my whistle.
How you doing?
It's time for the second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Here he is, the head of the household. Here's drum major Big Dog. It's Tom Abraham.
We strong.
You all may be taking the week off, this week, but I'm not.
Oh, come on, Nick. It's Mercer. You're taking a little bit of the week off, aren't you? I mean, come on. Mercer. They don't even have a line for the game yet, all right? It's Mercer. What are you going to do? I anticipate you guys taking a week off, that's for sure. But, you know, we don't talk a lot of college hoop yet. I mean, typically we don't. It's just, you know, usually we wait till after the conference championship games in college football, and then we start looking at the college hoop. But, I mean, you got something pretty salty going on tonight at the United Center. I mean, you've got number one Duke and number two Michigan State. And ESPN is telling us it's number four Kansas, number five Kentucky. But last I saw, Kentucky's number seven in the AP poll. So maybe the promos were done before that new poll came out. But we've got that going on tonight. You got Colin Sexton making his debut for Alabama tonight. They're number 26 in the most recent poll. And there's Sweaty Palms over at Auburn. So there's a lot of stuff out there to talk about. And I felt like, you know what? Let's do our first college hoop segment of the year, and let's do it with Greg Peterson. Let's find out about this guy. He is the college basketball expert and bracketologist for Brent Musburger's Vegas Stats and Information Network. You know, the guys in the desert, and he joins us now on the Woody Anderson Ford VIP Hotline. Greg, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate you being on. What's with the 920 area code, man? Isn't that Green Bay, Wisconsin? Where is that?
Yeah, that is from Green Bay, Wisconsin. I'm actually originally a Wisconsin guy that bounced all the way around the country. Been to Nashville, Tennessee, been to Portland, Oregon, Houston, Texas. Now I'm out here in the desert in Las Vegas.
Nice. Keeping the 920, though, right? And I would imagine, like a lot of other people from the land of cheese, a little bit bent out of shape about the way Wisconsin's being treated from a football standpoint. But they get that in basketball, too, don't they? A lot of times they don't get the love that they deserve.
They certainly did not last year, as they were an 8th seed in the NCAA tournament, and they proved the committee wrong as they were able to take down Villanova in that round of 32 game.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, before we get to tonight, just your take on this entire mess that took place, you know, basically, the FBI investigation, it's going to be ongoing. There's a lot that needs to be done to fix things in college basketball. But just how bad will this stink be on the season? Or are we looking at a really good college basketball season, and those are just isolated incidents that are going to, you know, continue to rear their ugly head around college basketball?
Well, I certainly think there's a lot of that stuff going on that the FBI uncovered. I mean, let's be honest here. There are players getting paid under the table. Let's not kid ourselves here. But at the same time, I think because it is still an ongoing investigation, it won't necessarily derail this year. Though I do think there could be another coach or two that gets fired, much like Rick Pitino was. But I don't think there will be any sanctions that come down this year. I think it's going to be a lot of stuff that happens in the future. We could see teams 2 or 3 years from now that get found in this thing, get popped. But I don't think it's going to have the biggest impact this year. And If you want to be really honest, and this sounds really weird, it might actually increase ratings a little bit this year, just because there are so many more people talking about college basketball right now that typically wouldn't be because of this thing.
Well, and you wonder though how good it would be for it to get cleaned up, and what it could mean for the sport going forward. And I'm a big believer. One of the things that has to happen is if these guys, I really think they got to figure out a way to implement the baseball rule. If these guys want to be drafted out of high school and go, let them go. Let the NBA play them. Let them play in the D League. If they're good enough, let them play in the NBA. If they wash out, they wash out. Let them take that risk. But if you go to college, you got to stay in college, go back in the draft after 3 years like you do in baseball, and at least we'll know the guys. You know what I mean? And how much better would the play be? We wouldn't have a situation like we got at Kentucky where they got eight freshmen, and they're going to be a completely different basketball team in February, March than they are right now.
I completely agree with you. You take a look at Kentucky's roster right now, their oldest veteran on the team averaged 4.5 points per game last year and is currently a sophomore. So it's completely to your point. You got a bunch of guys that go to college for 1 year. They don't get anything out of it. We've heard the stories about guys like Ben Simmons. Josh Selby was a very unfortunate story with Kansas. Probably would have been a lottery pick had he left straight out of high school. Goes to Kansas for 1 year, becomes a second-round draft pick with the Memphis Grizzlies. Never makes anything out of himself. I mean, I think it would be best for all parties if players had to stay for at least 2 years, if not three, with the baseball rule.
Yeah, and the thing is, with 3 years, I mean, once they go, then they'd be all in, because you may only have a certain number of one-and-dones, but you've got probably four times the number of actual one-and-dones of guys that think they're one-and-dones. And the guys that think they're one-and-dones that aren't are even more dangerous, because they don't even learn their way across campus, and then they're out of school, and then it turns out they're not drafted, and now you got a real mess. I would like to see kids who decide to go to college and take their scholarship, I would like to see them then be all in and committed and not be thinking about the NBA for a few years.
That would be best. And plus, you'd have guys that want to be there, and it's better for the fans too, because then you get to form a little bit of a bond with these guys, because so many of these fans of schools like Duke, Kentucky, all those schools that get the one-and-done players, they get to know the players, and then boom, five games later after the NCAA tournament, they're gone.
Yeah, and I'll say this too. You know, Jay Billis, who I think is one of the smartest guys that covers college basketball, and just ask him, he'll tell you that he is. But, you know, one of the things that he says that it's time to just completely dump the amateurism, and this would cover both college basketball and college football. And the interesting thing is that, you know, he talks about the fact that, you know, the schools can't pay the players. You can't pay players. I mean, you can't pay the kid. But you think about it, how many kids that are on campus have work-study jobs, that have jobs they get paid for? And, in fact, my son, before he went on scholarship, my son was a student assistant coach at Alabama and was paid $8 an hour for 20 hours a week to work on his coaching staff. So if a kid can get paid $8, even in that case, $8 an hour, but if a kid can get paid to be on a staff, a student, well, why the hell can't you pay a student to play?
Exactly. I'm right there with you. I mean, a lot of us that are out here in the media, out here in radio, things like that, you get paid a little bit for being on the school newspaper. You get a little bit for being on, like, the school radio station, things like that. It's obviously not as much as, say, a professional athlete makes, but you still get, like, your minimum wage. You get a couple hundred dollars a semester, things like that. So, I mean, I completely agree with you. I agree with you. I agree with Jay Billis. Just drop the amateurism. Let's give the kids a little bit of money. It doesn't have to be millions and millions of dollars, but just give them a little bit of help.
My son made $200 a week, you know? I mean, so why, you know, at the very least, why couldn't you pay a kid, a player, $200 a week when you can pay a kid to laminate the schedule and to, you know, break down film and stuff, $200 a week? Why can't you pay a player $200 a week? I mean, it's mind-boggling when you think about it. The kid who is working in the weight room, who is checking in the kids and putting the weights back away and wiping down the things, he's making $200 a week cash. And the kid who's lifting the weights, who all them people are coming to see play, can't make $200 a week cash. It's nuts.
Oh, exactly. And they're going to explain that it's all because they do get the scholarship, and that's true. But at the same time, I mean, those kids are certainly earning their scholarship. And the schools make millions upon millions of dollars off of football and basketball players. Obviously, they're not making money off, say, like the women's rowing team and things like that. Right. But football and basketball is paying so much for that school, it's not even funny.
Is Kentucky over their skis right now, being ranked wherever they're? I mean, I guess they're seven. I mean, they're promoting them as five, but you know, a couple of shaky starts in games that are, you know, not the ones that get these kids all excited. These kids that go to Kentucky don't go there to play Utah Valley. They go there to play, you know, Kansas, you know, at the United Center. So maybe we'll see a different Kentucky tonight. But do you think this Kentucky team is a little bit overrated or no?
I think Kentucky is overrated. This is not the seventh best team in the country, let's be honest. And this is a team that actually faded in the second half against Vermont. Typically, you'd think a team that has more physicality, has more size, would just be a little bit sluggish in the first half, but really take over in the second half. And it was the opposite with this Kentucky team. They have no outside shooting whatsoever. They've got a bunch of big guys that can rebound. They're good at not allowing teams to get second-chance opportunities, but they have nobody that can knock down the three. Kevin Knox is a nice player, but he's your best recruit, and he was number 10 in the nation, which is actually lower than typical for Kentucky squads. And typically the good Kentucky squads that John Calipari has, he has a couple players returning from last year. That is not the case with this year's squad, as their only returning player had like 4.5 points per game. I mean, this is just a completely new Kentucky squad. I mean, they could get better as the season goes along, but as of right now, they certainly aren't a top-10 team.
Keeping it in the SEC, a lot of people like the Florida Gators this year. A&M looks like they're pretty good this year. Alabama gets Colin Sexton tonight to go along with John Petty. They got some really good young studs there in year three for Avery Johnson. And I think it would be a disappointment if they weren't in the tournament. But Auburn without Wiley and Purifoy, I mean, are they, you know, where are you on them? And how many teams do you think the SEC can get in the tournament this year?
Going into the preseason, I had 8 teams from the SEC making it into the NCAA tournament. And Auburn, as of right now, is not one of them. I had them as a bit of a bubble team before the FBI sting. I think that with all that surrounding the program and all that surrounding their assistance, I currently have them outside the NCAA tournament just because you just don't know what's going to happen with that situation. But I really do like the SEC's outlook as a whole. Do not forget about Daniel Gibbons at Alabama as well. Very good forward. Yeah. He's a transfer from Ohio State. He's going to put up some numbers for this team. Braxton Key is a very good player as well. Alabama, I think, is loaded for bear, and I think they could be a top 25 team. And then you mentioned Florida a little bit earlier. I have them winning the SEC. I think this is a team that will likely get a top 2 seed. They could contend for a 1 seed as well. Very high on the Gators. You got Devin Robinson and company coming back. They got in a couple transfers. One from Rice, who just had a big game last night against Gardner-Webb. So I think that Florida is the top team in the SEC. I think the conference as a whole has really taken a step up.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things when the SEC took in A&M and Missouri, people were like, well, at least we got Missouri. We, you know, add a little basketball juice to the conference. And then they've kind of sucked, you know, for the last few years. But what do you think about their prospects now this year? I mean, is that a tournament team this year?
You speak about Missouri being bad. Last 3 years, they were combined 0-30 on the road, Missouri is. So
that's pretty bad.
Really, the Kim Anderson era did not go well out there in Columbia, but really like this year's team. I think they're an NCAA tournament team. Michael Porter actually sat out last night in their game against Wagner. They still won by over 40 points. This is a team that's just loaded with freshmen. They bring back all their big contributors from last year. I think that Michael Porter is a 6'10" player. He goes about 210, 215 pounds. He's able to go down low. He's able to step out, make the jumper. This is a tournament team that I could actually see being a top 25 team when it's all said and done.
What do you make of Belmont thumping Vanderbilt? I mean, that doesn't look good for the league. Belmont's always scrappy. They're tough. They had the biggest crowd they've ever had in their little arena the other night for that game. But, you know, that kind of takes a little bit of the luster off of the Commodores to see them getting beat by Belmont like that.
Yeah, I was not very bullish on Vanderbilt to begin the year. I had them as a preseason 10 seed. Now they're going to dip a little bit further. Belmont is a good team. I mean, this is a team that year in, year out, wins the Ohio Valley Conference. Often they make the NCAA tournament, unless if they lose in their conference tournament. So Belmont is no slouch, but obviously not a good look for Vanderbilt. And they've really been superseded by teams like Mississippi State, Ole Miss, and probably even Arkansas in that conference, as Arkansas looks very good in their first 2 games of the season.
Greg Peterson with us talking some college hoop. I'm a big Tom Izzo guy, and I'm very, you know, I'm fascinated about that game tonight and see how they look against Duke with Michigan State. It's their Big Ten to lose, though, right? I mean, they are the class of the Big Ten right now.
Oh, yes. They are number one in the Big Ten. And in my opinion, they're probably the second best team in the country. I think the AP poll has it right. Miles Bridges is a guy that was going to be a lottery pick if he declared for the NBA draft. He decided to come back. He's a 6'7" combo guard that does a little bit of everything. He blocks shots. He's able to hit shots from the outside. He does a very good job of distributing. Guy does a little bit of everything. Nick Ward down low is a forward. Very good player as well. They bring in a couple really good freshmen into the front court as well, something that they were lacking because last year they had to play with their two projected starting forwards out for the entire year in Ben Carter and Gavin Schilling. Both those guys are back, so Tom Izzo has a very loaded roster.
And then you got little Richard Pitino over there at Minnesota. I think if anybody's going to push, I think they're a team that's right near the top of the Big Ten. But how much of the stank that went down with his daddy, how much do you think that sticks to him? Are people, do they look at him completely independently, or do we think, you know, generally the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree?
I really haven't tied Richard Pitino into the things that his father did. I mean, it's a really tough call because he took over the Minnesota squad a couple years ago. He was at Florida International for a year beforehand. I haven't really tied him with it. I haven't really asked too many of my colleagues to see what they think. I'm sure it would probably be a little bit of a mixed bag. I'm sure that some tie the two together, but I'm sure there are others like myself that look at the two independently.
Yeah. All right. Just to bounce around a little bit, by the way, speaking of Big Ten, I mean, it pains me. It's not like I'm a big Indiana Hoosiers fan, but I was always a Bob Knight fan. And it pains me to see Indiana be, you know, in the bottom half of that league. I mean, what do they got to do to get that thing going? Was that all about Bobby Knight? It's Indiana, for God's sakes. I mean, what do they got to do to get back to being relevant?
Now, what I will say is Indiana 2 years ago did win the Big Ten. So
yeah,
it's not like they've been completely irrelevant. They did get a one seed in the NCAA tournament a couple years ago. But Tom Crean is just, he's a guy that really rode the coattails of Dwayne Wade at Marquette. And he just was not as good of a coach as many people thought that he was. That's just a plain and honest truth. They bring in Archie Miller, a guy that brought Dayton to an Elite Eight, which is nothing short of remarkable. He's a very good coach, but it's going to take some time. And he's going to have to bring in some good recruits. He's really going to have to use that Midwest pipeline. He's going to need to recruit that area and get the best guys. And he needs to form some defense because Indiana the past couple years has just been atrocious defensively. He brings in a little bit more of a tough-minded approach, and I think that he's going to get Indiana on the right track. It's going to take some time, though.
Yeah, man, in Archie Miller's first game, they got worked by Indiana State. I mean, that's just embarrassing. I mean, for folks in Indiana that are Hoosier fans, I mean, that's got to be a tough deal. All right, ACC. I love the ACC basketball like I do SEC football. But I'm seeing North Carolina not being right there next to Duke. I'm seeing them being down a little bit further, maybe on the list there. What's going on with those guys? And how does Louisville do post Pitino? Can they still contend in that league without their coach?
I think that it's going to be a little bit tough for Louisville just because you do have a 32-year-old interim head coach. I mean, we saw the game against George Mason; they were trailing 27-24 at the half. We're really having a tough time putting the ball in the basket. And they do have some nice players in Quentin Snyder and company. But at the same time, I think that it's going to be a little bit of a slog for them. North Carolina, meanwhile, they do have Joel Berry back. Once he gets back from the hand injury that he suffered playing a video game, which that's a story in and of itself. But, I mean, this is a team that does have to replace a lot of their rebounding from last year. Kennedy Meeks is gone. Justin Jackson is gone. You've also got Tony Bradley is also out. Many people were surprised that he left after being just a freshman. So, I mean, this is a team that they have a lot of pieces to replace. I see North Carolina as a top 25 team, and I think right in that 15-20 range is right where they should be.
And in the ACC, also, you know, Syracuse, seeing them down. I mean, I grew up a Syracuse fan growing up in upstate New York back in the day, the Pearl Washington days, and watching those guys be so dominant. But Jim Boeheim, who it's almost a miracle that this guy is still coaching. I don't understand how, but the second winningest coach in Division I basketball. But what's the story with Syracuse? It seems like they're not expected to do much this year.
No, they are not. They're led by a graduate transfer from Penn State by the name of Geno Thorpe. He's a guy that averaged right around 14, 15 points per game at Penn State. Pretty good outside shooter, but they just don't return a lot from last year. The 2-3 zone is not what it's been in the past years. They do not have the forwards that they've had in the past, so I do think it's going to be a bit of a down year. I see them being in the bubble, much like they have been in the past couple of years. Obviously, they got the benefit of the doubt in 2015, or 2016, I should say. We saw how that wound up with them making the Final Four as a 10 seed. Last year, they did not get that benefit of the doubt, and they went to the NIT. I think this year could be the same, as I think that they're going to be on the bubble, probably going to the NIT.
Greg Peterson has been our guest. He is the lead college basketball expert and bracketologist for Brent Musburger's Vegas Stats and Information Network. Pretty good, man. Strong, Greg. I mean, we didn't talk beforehand. You didn't know what teams I was going to throw at you, and you had good info on all of them, man. That's pretty good. I look forward to talking to you again.
Anytime. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, man. Thank you. T-Mac, I just was like going off. You know, there was no script as to, okay, you know, ask me about this team, that team. I mean, there's 300 teams that play college basketball. And I'm just like, okay, Syracuse. And boom, he's got names off the, he's dropping names in there and everything. I mean, that was strong. And, hey, how about Louisville? How about this team? How about that team?
He was giving you insight about Belmont and everything else.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
That's good. That's solid, man. But he almost sounded Canadian. I mean, I know he's from up north.
From Wisconsin. So. Those Wisconsin, that is Canada. I mean, let's just be honest. I mean, Wisconsin is like Canada. I mean, he didn't drop any A's in there and everything, but he's from Wisconsin. That's like Minnesota. They're right over the next to Minnesota, those people in Wisconsin and Minnesota. All right. By the way, I'm going to come back around to that when we get done with our interviews. I want to get back to what Jay Billis said. I think it's something that's kind of fascinating when you're talking about amateurism in college athletics. At what level do we talk about them? All right. I just want to get a little bit there. No, he didn't sound like Rick from North Fort Myers. Jeez, Grumpy says the guy talking college hoop sounds exactly like Rick from North Fort Myers.
He didn't sound anything like him.
It sounded like Rick. You kidding me?
The whole time I was thinking maybe we can get him and Greg Wyshynski on an NHL podcast because he sounded so Canadian to me, but it's because he's from Wisconsin. But he didn't sound like Rick.
Remember, you text the text window and call the call-in line at 866-485-9867. You text 732-982-7469. I have several texts today that say you missed a call. I don't miss calls on the text window. Just don't call. I mean, it's just the way it is. Chris in Madison says college football, March Madness, playoff MLB. Well, no, March Madness, I'm talking about a sport. So are you saying college basketball? So college football, college basketball, and baseball? See, he wants to break it down into March Madness and playoff
MLB.
You can't say playoff. It's either you're taking, give me the three sports that you, if you could only have three. Just right. Give me the three sports if you can only have three.
That's the beauty of it, because college football as a whole product, I think everybody's going to pick, especially down here. But everything else has just one specific element that's so good about it that you think about all the other ones. Like in the NFL, you got the Super Bowl, but you got the playoffs before it. But the Super Bowl is that one big spectacle every year that no one wants to miss. No one wants to miss March Madness. Everyone wants to be included.
You can't say like the Masters for golf. Right. You can't just say the Masters. No. If you want golf, you got to say you want PGA golf. You can't say just the Daytona 500, the Masters, and the Super Bowl. That's not what the question is. The question is, if you could only have three sports to watch and there were no other sports, I said for me it would be college football, Major League Baseball, and the NHL. Now, it doesn't mean that I love baseball and NHL more than the NFL. I certainly love the NFL more than baseball and hockey. But the point is that if I can only have three things, I'll get my football Jones off of college football.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then I'll go, for me, I'll go baseball and I'll go hockey. Hockey will be my winter spring sport. Baseball is my all-around summer sport. And I know by taking baseball, I will never watch another NASCAR race. I love NASCAR. I love the I love the majors in golf.
Right. If you were going to be able to substitute stuff like that, the first thing I would do, I know we're not doing that. First thing I would do, I'd get rid of NBA. I'd substitute NBA All-Star weekend because I picked the NBA. I would substitute NBA All-Star weekend for the Final Four weekend. You know, give me that for that. But we can't do that. That's not how you answer the question.
Said, that's a different question.
Right.
That question will be someday we'll say, what are your three favorite things in all of sport? It might be the national championship game in college football. It might be, you know, specific bowl games or whatever. McCringleberry says NBA coverage is like going to the doctor and getting a shot. You know that it needs to be done, but you're sure glad when it's over.
Oh, come on, McCringleberry.
Now that I think about it, it's really more like going to the proctologist.
Oh, no.
And getting your prostate checked. You know it needs to be done, but you're sure glad when it's over.
How many listeners are old enough to have had that done yet? I know we got a few. I'm certainly not.
Oh,
there.
They do it when you get your vasectomy. They do it. A lot of guys who get their vasectomy in their 30s. When they do, when I went for my vasectomy, the doctor says, he says I need to do a digital exam. I'm like, I'm okay. I'm computer literate. I do a digital exam. So what? You know, I'm thinking digital exam is, you know, something with you know, a computer. It's a digital exam, right? I didn't realize he meant he was going to stick his digits.
Oh my. Oh my.
In the nether regions. I mean, then the next thing I know, the lights are getting dim, and I hear the gloves snapping and the goop coming out, and he says the six most awful words that any man ever hears. Put your elbows on the table.
Oh. Things that make
the only thing that's worse than that is if you feel both his hands on your shoulders, you know what I mean, while he's doing it. But then the doctor, and my doctor that was doing it, that was going to do my vasectomy, he was like a jockey. He was like this little Indian guy. I couldn't understand him, dot, not feather. I couldn't understand the guy, a word he was saying hardly. I heard digital exam. I'm like, okay. He's this little guy. And then after he does the exam and they check the prostate and all that stuff, and then he says to me, he says, because we're going to have to do your vasectomy in the operating room. He says, you were kind of jumpy when I was doing the exam. I'm like, you know what? How about you put your elbows on the table and we'll see who's jumpy, okay? Okay, Harish? All right, how about we do that? How about you put your elbows on the table and I'll leave?
Now, you said you walked in there and he told you a couple things. What was the first thing he said to you? Because in my mind, the first thing the guy giving you a vasectomy would say would be, what the hell took you so long? Because you have nine
kids.
Yeah,
no, he knew. Yeah, they knew I had started my own race. They were like, geez, this guy here, man. I mean, this was going to be good stuff, too. I mean, we're talking about, you know, this was legendary stuff here that they were going to cut off. I mean, you know, I make love to my wife. My neighbors got pregnant. I mean, it was, you know, this was, so, I told them, I says, you better do it really well because my guys will jump. I mean, they'll go right through and keep going. I mean, you know, you're going to tie that knot tight, man. I'm just saying, when you tie that thing off, you better tie it off real tight. My boys will get through. Yeah, we do, don't we?
It's great.
McCringleberry says it's better if you limit it to two, not three, because three gets you off the hook. Well, not when you think about golf and tennis and NASCAR.
Yeah, I mean, real sports junkies, man. Three's still tough.
Fine, Chris says. College football, NCAA basketball, and MLB.
Mm-hmm. Let the Braves be good for a couple seasons, and I might change my mind.
Greg says college football, college basketball, and the NFL. Jimbo says college football, MLB, and the PGA Tour. And volunteer Jimbo. It's good to see he still likes college football, even though he's had to endure what he's had to endure. And of course, we've got a call coming in on the text window from the 931. There, I just hung up on that person. And Grumpy says, what time are you taking calls? Top of the hour. Volman says, college football, college basketball, and college softball. Oh, come on, Volman. Really? Really? I mean, it would be college softball. Okay. Let's get a break. Stop calling the text window. Text the text window. Call 866-485-9867, but not now because I am going to talk fantasy football next. Speaking of Grumpy, just killing our league, man. Joe Galina is next. 730, 103.9 AM.